This is the question we're looking at tonight. As Jamie already mentioned, we asked the question of the coast, what's your biggest question in life? And the one we got that we're dealing with this week is, why are we here? And this really, this is a, that's a big question, isn't it? That's the deep, serious question, why are we here? Now, just so you know, when we asked the coast what their biggest question in life was, we didn't get all serious, deep answers. Yeah, some of the responses we got were kind of crazy, silly, funny. I'll give you a couple of them. A number of people really wanted to know their biggest question was, are aliens real? All right. Apparently, it's still a biggie. One bloke even said this. This is his biggest question in life. How can I kill my ex-wife and get away with it? And as I'm just saying that, I'm thinking, I hope he was being silly and crazy. I hope he wasn't being serious. But look, this one, this response was right up there. A lot of people answered really honestly. They went really deep, really quickly off the bat by being asked this question. And they said one of the biggest questions of God is, why? What are we even doing here? What on earth are we here for? What's the meaning of life? And friends, this is the age-old question. It's been the question that humanity has continued to ask from the very beginning. Why are we alive? Why are we here? And we're the only creatures on earth that appear to be asking the question, but we seem to just have been doing it right throughout the ages, and we're still doing it today. 2016, one of the biggest questions people have is, what's our purpose? What's the meaning of our existence? I think there are certain moments in life that sometimes cause you to ask that question, and they can be the transition moments in life. I see, you know, teenagers when they get to the end of high school and the studies are finishing and everyone's asking them, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do next? And they start having that little dilemma, that crisis of, well, I don't know what I want to do with myself, but apparently I'm meant to know. And my wife, Deb, that was actually, she'll tell you her story. This was the moment in her life where she paused and started asking big questions. Yeah, what is next? So you finish your studies, go to uni, get a job, family, kids. I don't know, is that it? What's the point of it? It can be those transition moments we ask the question. Some people ask it when they're just about to have kids, you know. A lot of people don't. A lot of people just go, well, what's next in my life? Well, everyone around me is having kids, so I guess we have kids, you know. Others don't. Others pause and go, should we have kids? Why would we have kids? Why is anyone having kids? What are we doing here? You know, like, you just kind of transition moments can do that to you. A lot of people have it with their midlife crisis. You know, you get to that point in your life where you're like, whoa, it's the best part of my life is gone. Have I done what I'm meant to be doing while I'm here? What am I meant to be doing while I'm here? I don't even know if I've done it yet. I better go out and buy a red sports car, you know? Or whatever people do today for midlife crises. But you know, it's often the transition moments, but sometimes it's not even the transition moment. Sometimes that question to just come plummeting into your life and catch you out of the blue. You're there with your trolley full of shopping and all of a sudden you're like, why am I doing this? And, you know, the answer, you know, to feed the hungry mouths, is it's not a big enough one. You're like, but why are we feeding hungry mouths? What am I even doing? Everyone around me is doing this too. And you almost have that out-of-body experience. You ever have that where you kind of, it's almost like you get drifted up above your body and you're looking down on you and your life and everyone else in their lives. You ever do that? And you kind of like, you just almost see us all scurrying around, busying ourselves, learning things, earning money, spending money, going here, traveling there. We're just going for it. You ever sit up above it and just go, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What's the point? That's the big question we're asking tonight. I reckon if you ever sit still for long enough in silence and just watch people or watch yourself for a good amount of time, you'll start having deeper reflections about life and you'll start asking the more ultimate questions about life. But that can be scary to ask those bigger questions because sometimes the answers are not very good. You might not be able to get a satisfactory answer in the moment. King Solomon, 3,000 years ago, attempted to ask these more ultimate questions, one of the wisest men ever in history. And he just had a look around and he goes, look, the sun comes up and it goes down. He goes, wait a minute, comes up again. You keep watching it. It just keeps doing it. And the wind blows from here to there. And then everyone's just laboring and toiling. doing their things. They're born and then they die. Whole generations come and then they go. And the world just keeps turning. And nothing really changes. And there's nothing really new going on. King Solomon just goes, everything's meaningless. You know, sometimes if you pause and ask the question, what's the meaning? Sometimes it's kind of scary to ask the question because you kind of go, is there meaning? Or is it all just meaningless? And if that's the case, if it is really a kind of a scary question to ask, the more ultimate question, it's no surprise at all that we're so good at just staying busy and just going from one thing to the next. We just fill our lives with busyness. How you going, mate? Oh, busy. Yeah, of course you are. Everyone's busy. You know, I'm so busy. Oh, good for you. We're all busy. You know, like, why are we busy? Busy doing what? Sorry, I had a bit of a go at, I don't know who I was having a go at there. It's myself. And it's actually easy, really, to just stay distracted, you know, stimulated, entertained by all kinds of things. There used to be a moment every day when people used to just stop and sit in silence, or relative silence, and it used to be the moment they go to the toilet. We can't even do that anymore. Everyone takes their phone to the toilet with them. I think it's disgusting and you shouldn't do it. But we don't even have those moments anymore because we've just got this device in our hand that we just can continually stimulate us, continually entertain us. And have you noticed how the videos now, if you're like, oh, the funny, I'll watch one funny video. Yeah, you click on it, say, oh, that's funny. And then the next one just comes for you. And you're like, oh, I watched that one. Oh, and before you know it, you know, 20 minutes has gone by. And you're like, what have I just done with my life? You know, it's actually easy to just be distracted from ever thinking seriously and just be entertained. The world we live in, it's super easy. However, when we do ask that question, you do take the time to ask it. It's not up there anymore, is it? Was there. It's okay, the phone number's there. That's the one to text to if you're thinking, oh, what is this guy talking about? One of the big answers that is offered to us when we ask the question, honestly, why are we even here? One of the big answers is, well, here are two of the big answers. Oh, good on you, Erica. Look at it go. Sorry, that's because that just came back up. The more honest, extreme atheist or nihilist, you know, you Friedrich Nietzsche, kind of answer would be this, why are we here? What's the purpose of life? Well, life has no ultimate meaning. There actually is no purpose. Stop asking the question. That's what the nihilist would say. But it's funny that everyone keeps asking the question. We're pretty obsessed with asking the question about meaning. That says something to you, doesn't it? But you know the most common answer that I find to this question, why we're here, that's offered by our world, by our society, it's this. We ask the question, what's my purpose? The resounding answer is, find your own. Just go and find your own purpose. Yeah? We're all different. We're all unique in our own way. And your job is to go and discover your own unique purpose and pursue it. You need to understand why you were put on this earth and do it. That's what we're told. Now, I don't know about you, but that just freaks me out a little bit. It's like, oh, no, I've got to find that thing. There's this incredibly unique and special reason why I'm here, and I've got to find it, and I've got to do that with my life. Does anyone else get freaked out by that mantra that we hear all the time? You think, well, how do I know what's mine? How do I find out what my purpose is, my special, unique purpose that gives me meaning in my days? Well, they'll tell you this. They'll say, whatever you do, don't copy anyone else's, which is kind of scary. So you've got to come up with something that's really unique. And you've got to make sure you don't just do what other people tell you to do. Don't just go and be this because your parents said that's what you should be. You don't listen to anyone. Don't copy anyone. Just come up with your own. That sounds kind of freaky. Yeah? The right thing to do is be true to yourself, apparently. Follow your heart. It will steer you. Or whatever feels important to you, that's what can give you purpose. Whatever makes you surge with emotion when you do it or see it, that's what you should go after. It might be making music, it might be making money, it might be making babies, it might be feeding the poor, it might be teaching children. Whatever it is, you just go and you live the dream however you define the dream. Because that's going to give you meaning and that's going to give you purpose. When I was a kid, one of the only books I liked reading were those Choose Your Own Adventure books. And I remember them. Okay, All right, you. I don't know if they still exist, but I liked them because, you know, you get to the point, you get to choose your own adventure. You know, do you want to go through the tunnel or you want to swim back across the lake? And I could never decide. So I would, you know, I'd turn to both page 59 and 304 and see what happens then. But then there's another decision and you've got to decide where you go there. And then I'd have all my fingers in the book like this going, I don't know. I want to make the best decision. And I'm being told I've got to choose my own adventure. This is the deal. You've got to choose your own purpose, we're told. And you've got to go after your own purpose. And that kind of does make sense to us in this generation because we're the options generation. We get options from day one about what we want to do. We're asked since we're very young by our parents, what do you want to do? You know, you don't have to accept the status quo. You can choose from lots of options. You can basically design your own life. You can basically craft or create your own existence, your own career, your own family unit, however you want that to look like, your own lifestyle, your own purpose for existence. But my question is this, even if that does make sense to us, that we think we can craft our own, choose our own purpose, is it okay? Is it okay to come up with your own meaning, your own purpose for existence? Our world says, yes, that's what you've got to do. Just go for it. You turn open to the Bible and you ask Jesus particularly, is it okay for me to just go and make up my own purpose for myself according to what makes sense to me and what makes me feel good? And Jesus says, be very, very careful how you define your purpose because you can totally get it horribly wrong. You can get your purpose wrong. Luke chapter 12, the passage that we just had read to us, pull that out again if you've got it on the sheet or you've got it in the Bible because that's the passage we're going to look at here tonight. And friends, this is an example of a man who Jesus is speaking to who gets his purpose wrong. He gets it wrong. And I really want you to see it. That's why it's recorded here for us. Jesus meets a man who, this man who's defining his purpose in a very particular way, Jesus sees it and gives him a big warning. Have a look at verse 13 there. Someone in the crowd said to him, that's Jesus, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. So this fella asked, tells Jesus to do something for him. He's obviously having a bit of a dispute with a brother about the inheritance, you know, who gets the money. And he's saying to Jesus, can you tell him to give me some? Because I don't want to be missing out on my inheritance. Now, it sounds like a kind of a reasonable request. If they just need someone to kind of be a bit of a mediator or give a verdict on a bit of a dispute here. And actually, in the ancient world, you would go to your local rabbi, because he'd be the one who'd be able to help you with figuring that kind of stuff out. But look at how Jesus responds to him. Man, verse 14, who appointed me a judge and arbiter between you? In other words, I'm not your typical rabbi. I'm not interested in just doing that kind of stuff. That's actually not what I'm here for. Verse 15, then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. This is a cracking verse to remember. Watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. It's almost like Jesus is being a little bit harsh with him here. But you know what Jesus is doing? Jesus sees beneath the surface of the request that sounds kind of reasonable, you know, I'm concerned about my personal finances. Jesus sees beneath that to this guy's heart, and he sees the condition of this guy's heart, and what he sees there is that this man is gripped with greed. He's obsessed with getting finances and possessions. It's where he thinks security is going to come from. Jesus can see that for this guy, he's defining purpose as the accumulation of possessions. That's what he's trying to do with his life. And so Jesus warns him. He says, oh, mate, you've got to watch out. You've got to be on your guard. Notice what Jesus doesn't do. He doesn't say, oh, yeah, each to their own. Whatever you want to do with your life, mate, it's all good. Just go for it. However you define your purpose, go for it. Jesus is like, no. Don't do that with your life. That's not what it's about. You're getting the purpose of life wrong, and Jesus is warning him. And then Jesus goes on and kind of really drills the warning home by telling him a story to illustrate the point even more. The Bible calls it a parable, and you see these popping up all the time in the scriptures. Jesus uses parables all the time, which is just a little story. In this case, it's a warning story for this bloke, so the bloke wouldn't miss the point. Have a look at it there with me. Look at verse 16. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. It's kind of a typical picture in the ancient world. You've got this wealthy farmer who actually ends up with a bumper crop, and he's got more crop, more wealth than he knows what to do with, and he's stuck with a bit of a dilemma that he doesn't have any space to store his crops, his wealth. The kind of dilemma that, you know, we all kind of long to be in. What do I do with all my money? I don't know where to store it. I don't know what to do. This is the picture that Jesus gives, the story that he tells. But then the fella kind of sorts out his own dilemma. Look at verses 18. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I will say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. So he comes up with a solution. I know what I'll do. I've got too much stuff. I've got too much money. I just got to make bigger places to store it. So he tears down his barns, builds big ones, stores all his grain in. He's thinking, good. You know what this means for me? Retirement. And a sweet retirement. I'm going to sit back and I'm just going to live it up. Now, you hear that, and our world hears that, and I think just gives it two big thumbs up. It's like, good. Of course, that's what you do. You've got to be wise with your money. You want to store it up. You actually want to look after yourself in the future. So, you know, really, as Jesus tells this story, a lot of people in the crowd, and I don't doubt some of us here today are thinking, yeah, good call, mate. You do that. That's wise. That's kind of smart. But it's interesting, Jesus gives the exact opposite verdict. Jesus says, I'll tell you what God thinks of that. Have a look. Verse 20. But God said to him, you fool. Now, why is Jesus saying God says he's a fool? Well, this very night, your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself? You know, Jesus says, God's verdict on this guy is, that is so, so dumb. That's so foolish. And I'll tell you why. You've spent your life saving up for this season that you're not even going to get to experience. The whole purpose of your life has been focused on storing up for that, and it's not even going to come. You've got the purpose of life wrong. You've blown it. You've just been totally focused on storing up things for yourself. And you see the verdict there in verse 21. This is how it will be for whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. You know? It's Jesus just goes, bump, bump. You got your purpose wrong. It is a huge mistake to spend your life saving up things for yourself and failing to be rich towards God. You spend your life being rich towards yourself, which is to be generous towards yourself and live for yourself, and fail to be rich and generous toward God. Now, there's the story that Jesus tells. Here what I say is the two big things that Jesus wants us to get from that. Two big points from Jesus' story. The first, and they're really obvious, but we need to hear them. The first one is this. You can get your purpose wrong. Here's an example. A guy who pursues abundance for himself. Materialism. We live in a world that idolizes materialism. And Jesus, this is one example of how to get your purpose completely wrong. Our world says, choose your own purpose, do whatever feels right to you. Jesus says, don't. You can get it wrong just like this guy. I want to warn you, don't just do what makes sense to you. You can have a complete shocker and end up wasting your life and wrecking your life. So, how do we know what it is about? If you can get it wrong, how do we know how to get it right? How should I define the purpose of my life? How should you determine the meaning of your existence? Because apparently it's possible to get it wrong. Well, here's the principle I want to give to you that's kind of embedded in this passage that lies beneath all of the scriptures. Here's the principle. Your purpose for existence is defined by the one who made you. Yeah? Purpose is defined by the Creator. You see, if you made yourself or created yourself, gave yourself life, then go ahead and define your purpose however you want. But if someone else gave you life, if someone else made you, built you, designed you, then they did that with a purpose in mind. So it just makes sense, doesn't it, to go to them and ask them what it is. What's my purpose? That just makes sense. There's the principle. Let your purpose be defined by your maker. You see this principle kind of come through in the passage, and I just kind of want to point it out to you here. You see evidence of there being a maker, a creator here for this man. Have a look at verse 20 and look at how his death is described. But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you." Catch that language. This very night your life will be demanded from you or required from you, which implies what? That there's somebody taking it. There's a person removing life from this man. And the only way to be the one who removes life is to be the same one who actually can give life. It's only the creator or the maker who has the right to give it and then remove it. It's beneath the surface of this text. We have a God who made us. We have a God who built us and wired us. And he can take life when he sees fit. You've got a maker. You've got a creator. And you've got a sustainer as well. You catch that in verse 16. It's kind of beneath the surface, but you can see evidence of it. Look at this. And he told them this parable, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest." So where did the rich man get his abundant harvest from? Surely as a farmer, he worked the ground, no doubt. But you're told here, no, the ground yielded an abundant harvest. He is given this harvest. Yeah? That's kind of the language just helps you understand that. You don't make it yourself. Not only have we got a God who's given us life and created us, you've got a God who continues to give you life and sustains your life and even gives you wealth. Everything you are, everything you've got has been given to you by God. This is the big message of the Bible. You've got a maker. You've got a creator. You've got a sustainer. So friends, does it not make sense that when you're defining your purpose for existence, you go to the one who made you and built you? It just makes sense, doesn't it? To ask them why they did it. Why'd you make me? Why did you build me? Now, we get how this principle works because we do it all the time. We make stuff, don't we? And when we make stuff, you make it with a particular purpose in mind, don't you? Think of the things you've made or think of the things that people make. You make them for a particular purpose or a particular action. That's what they're for. And if that thing that you made, you start using it for a completely different purpose or other things, you end up wasting it or wrecking it. And I want to give you an example tonight. For the last few weeks, I've brought in with me like a big prop to kind of illustrate something in my sermon. However, this week, I'm sorry to say, I haven't brought anything with me tonight. However, while I was sitting there, I was looking around, and I think I've spotted something that I can use to illustrate this point of how we make things for a particular purpose, but if you use them for a purpose for which they're not intended, you waste them or wreck them. So I'm kind of looking behind me, seeing a whole bunch of musical instruments. Okay? You know where I'm going with this, don't you? I'm thinking, they've been made for a particular purpose, right? I was thinking about the piano for a bit, but I'm drawn to the drums or the guitars, and I'm thinking, I'm going to do this, all right? So the musos are kind of looking nervously at me but for a little while, but I'm thinking I'm going to grab one of these guitars and talk about purpose for a little bit. So I don't know which one I'm allowed to take. Is this?
Can you choose one of the other ones?
That's yours, Paul? Johnny, is this one yours? I'll look after it, okay? I'll be very careful. So this is a guitar, right? Now, I would love to demonstrate for you. Let's say I'm a fool, all right? I'm not, but let's say I'm a fool just for a minute. Okay, it looks good on me, doesn't it? Can't play it for goods, but you know. You tell me that the purpose for which this is made, and you know because you know why guitars are made, but I don't because I'm a fool. You tell me, guitars are made for the purpose of making beautiful music, yeah? And I would love to illustrate that for you, but I can't. But you tell me that's what the purpose of this thing is. And I hear you say that and I go, I don't know. I don't think so. Like, I'm looking at this thinking, no, I actually reckon I could do something else with this. I actually reckon this is built for something else. And I choose my own purpose for this thing. Can you see where I'm going with it? I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, now this looks to me like you could do lots of other things. I don't know, what could you do with it? You could, I was looking at the strings before and I was thinking, you know, you could, almost like a bit of a clothesline, you know, you could prop it up somehow. You could hang stuff from it. You could even hook little coat hangers on it. Look, you could do that, couldn't you? And then I started looking at this puppy and I'm thinking, this looks like a piece of sporting equipment. Don't you reckon? Now, I know it's January, I'm going to be careful. I know it's January. And in January, I get all sporty, and I'm not normally sporty, but tennis. How's tennis? Right? This looks like a tennis racket, don't you reckon? Yeah, you know, kind of like a tennis racket. You just have a little ball down here, all right? I'm going to do this. Just move this. It's okay, I'm not going to trash it, okay? I think you can have this. So I'm just going to serve this ball because I'm thinking this is what it's for, all right? You ready? You going to catch it? I'm going to swing this thing. Hey, oh, it's all right, isn't it? Tennis racket. I'm also thinking cricket bat, you know, like this. What do you reckon? Yeah, get someone bowl it. See, that's all right. And you're telling me if it's a music, I'm thinking, no. I'm thinking musical instrument. In fact, I'm thinking something else now. Just as I'm looking at this thing, I'm seeing this, and I'm thinking this thing here looks to me like a trampoline. Okay, like a mini tramp. You with me? Look at this thing. Doong, doong, doong. So I'm thinking, this thing is going to let me, I don't know if I can do it. I think it'll be all right. I think it's going to be okay. See, look at that. It's going to get, oh! I'm so sorry, John. I honestly thought it was meant to be a trampoline. I believed that that was its purpose. All right? Sorry. Now, in case any of you are sitting there thinking, oh, my goodness, no, it's not John's guitar, all right? It's an old one. We were going to chuck it anyway. But even if it wasn't, it'd be worth using for a good sermon illustration, all right? You're getting my point, aren't you? You hear my point of how foolish it can be to think you can define something's purpose ignoring the maker of it, the designer of it. When the designer says something, you need to listen to it, use it for that purpose. Friends, we are the same. We have a designer. We have a maker. We can either listen to him and ask him why we've been made or think we know better. And friends, when we think we know better and we think we can make up our own purpose, our own meaning, expect to waste your life. Expect to wreck your life. This is what's going to happen for us. This is Jesus' warning. We need to ask our maker what our purpose is. And friends, there is one ultimate purpose for which we exist. Now, underneath that one big ultimate purpose, the Bible does acknowledge our uniqueness and our difference. Absolutely. You're a snowflake, you know. No one's got your fingerprints. The Bible does affirm our individuality and our uniqueness. Absolutely. We're wired differently. We've got different passions. We've got different strengths. The Bible talks about using your different gifts, but it does that all underneath one big uniting purpose for which we exist. What is it? Look at verse 21. And this doesn't tell us in a complete, detailed kind of way, but I tell you what, it points us right in the right direction. Yeah, have a look at it. The last three words there. Rich toward God. Rich, which means generous towards God, using what you have for God. Now, there's a sense in which we kind of suspected that principle there anyway, yeah? I mean, it makes sense to us to hear that life's not about things, it's about people. Yeah, it's about relationships. So you know, you're probably reading this story going, yeah, what a fool, thinking it was all about abundance in possessions. Yeah, most people do that. But the next step we usually make is, yeah, it's not about things, it's just about others. It's about people. But look at how Jesus puts it. It's almost surprising, isn't it? You get to the end of this story and you're almost expecting Jesus to say, look, don't store up things for yourselves. Instead, you know, be rich towards others. Like, that's what you're expecting him to say. It's not about you. It's about others and being generous with them and giving to them. Now, that is true, friends, but Jesus takes us one step further than simply the acknowledgement that it's not about you. It is about others, but friends, it's about one particular other. It is about relationships, but it's about one specific relationship. Your relationship with your Maker, your Creator, which is why he says, rich towards God. He points us in the direction of God so that we would see our ultimate purpose in life is to use not just our finances, but all of ourselves, use all that we have for him. Because it's actually all about him. Knowing him, loving him, relating to him, walking with him. That relationship is the ultimate relationship that you were created for. All of your relationships are important. They are. Friends, family, spouse, kids, they're all important, but there's one particular relationship that is most significant, most important, and Jesus directs us there. It's that one. And you know, as we think about the difference, you know, in importance between all of our relationships and the one with our God, I can't help but thinking that's like this. Your relationship towards God, I'm just looking down for a minute. Yes, your relationship with God is so significant that in comparison, all your other relationships are really like this. They're good and they're important, and but they're given to you ultimately to whet your appetite for this one, the ultimate one. All of your relationships are given to us as, here's the word I want to use, appetizers. Yeah? You know what an appetizer does? Appetizers are important, but appetizers are just those first few little bits of food that come out that whet your appetite for the real stuff that's coming later. And I'm living with this in my mind because last night I was at a wedding. Some of you guys were there. And the caterers at this wedding, we've seen these caterers in operation at other people's weddings as well. They've got it down to a fine art of how to pull out the appetizers in a way that just gives you a little taste and you're left wanting more. And you get a little bit more, but you're left wanting more. It almost anticipates the real thing that's to come. So, you know, out comes just a little meatball. Nice meatball. You know, it's good. Oh, that's all right. There's a little bit of squid. Oh, that's all right. And it just keeps getting a little bit bigger, a little bit better, but you know where it's heading. You're not meant to fill up on the appetizers. It's meant to be pointing you towards the main course that's coming. And I'll tell you what, last night, these caterers do that well. Oh, this isn't an ad for any particular catering company, but I'll tell you what, when they came out with that real deal, the main course thing, and just start passing out, you're just like, yeah, this is it. This is why we're here, you know. It's all about this thing. Everything else was just a prelude. Everything else was just a trailer to kind of get us to this point. And friends, this is the deal with the relative importance of our relationships with each other and with God. All of your other relationships, they are important, but friends, they are to whet your appetite for the one relationship that you were ultimately created to have. You are made to know your God. He's the main course. He's what it's all about. Everything else is meant to be pointing you there, whetting your appetite for that. But what do? We tend to just fill ourselves with the nibblies, yeah? And we try and get all of our satisfaction and meaning out of relationships with people, which are important, but they're not ultimate. So get your head out of the chip bowl, you know? It's going to be disappointing if you fill yourself up on appetizers. Relationships are good, but friends, your relationships are meant to be pointing you to the one with God. Have you got that one? Because that's what it's all about. Friends, your purpose in existence is to know him, love him, live for him, walk with him. It's him. That's what you're here for. You exist to know your God. That's why he made you. Jesus gets even more explicit than simply saying God, Because if you just leave it there and you say, look, you just got to know your God, then that does leave everyone thinking, okay, well, which God? Or does it matter how? Or I'll just know God however makes sense to me. And if doing... No. Jesus gets very specific about how to actually know God, love God. Yep. Matthew chapter 22 is one passage that kind of gets us closer to it. If you've got a Bible, you might want to turn open to that quickly, but I'm going to pop it up on the screen as well. Here's Jesus saying, look, here's the purpose of life. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Sorry, that passage almost illustrates what I'm talking about with the appetizers and the main course. You know, love your neighbor. Absolutely, you're called to love everyone in your life. But friends, there is a prominence here. The first and greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God. But how do we love him? How do we know him? Again, Jesus gets really specific on that. So Erica, if you can go to John 14 there for me. And many of you know this passage back the front, a very famous passage, offensive passage. But here's what Jesus says. He says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father, that's God, except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. And the way Jesus says, from now on, you can know God and see God, because he's saying, because I'm standing right in front of you. And I am the key to knowing God. I'm the way to get you to God. So friends, if you're thinking, I want my purpose, I want to know my meaning, Jesus says, it's through me. He says, I'm the key to it. You actually can't get to know God outside of me. It's all about me, Jesus says. There's a cafe down at Wombe that used to be called Ibar, and I still just call it Ibar because, you know, you live back in the day when it was important to you, and so we just keep calling it Ibar. They put out a little everyday Helen writes a new kind of meaningful, significant kind of thing on the front board. It's called Lotus now. Anyway, she writes something on there. The other day she wrote, get some meaning in your life. I'm with her. Get some meaning in your life, absolutely. But here's my big question. Here's our big question. Will you allow the one who made you to define your meaning? Will you accept that the one who created you has the right to determine your purpose? He's been very clear. We come with instructions. He tells us what we're here for. He says, I built you for me. I built you to know me and enjoy relationship with me. I built you to love me. I built you to walk with me. You see that in the first few pages of the Bible when he first makes humanity and God comes in the cool of the evening and he walks with them. You're built to walk with God. You're built to know your maker. But it is your choice, you know, all of you here tonight, it is your choice. You can hear that. You can hear God speak through his word and hear him say, I think really clearly, you exist for me. You exist. You got a choice. You can hear that and you can say, oh, I don't know. I don't reckon. No, I reckon I am for... You can do that. Come up with your own purpose. And that's our temptation, to try and be so unique that we come up with our own meaning. That's what the world we're living in tells us to do. But friends, if you do that, you might find something to do with your life that even feels right for a bit, that even feels enjoyable for quite some time. But in the end, you'll stand before God and he'll just go, that was foolish. I entrusted you with life so that you'd know me and you went and spent it on other things. You've wasted your life. You've wrecked your life. It's your choice. You can do that. Or you can hear what he has to say and you can accept it and you can go after your God, your maker, with all of your strength, with all of your days. And you can know with confidence that's your purpose. That's the meaning of your existence. That's the very reason you're alive here on earth, is to know him and love him and walk with him. There's the Bible's answer, some of the Bible's answer. I'm going to pause now, and if there have been some questions that have come through, Jamie will come up, and you might still have a question. You might fire it through, and we'll see if we've got time to get to them. I went a bit longer tonight. Sorry, it's all the guitar smashing. I've always wanted to smash guitars. Anyway, yeah, is there a question? I'm not a muser, but I thought I'll figure it out one day.
No warm-up, straight in.
Okay. You had a really hard one first up last week.
Yeah, same again. Same deal again. Okay. Why wouldn't God want us to make our own choices, doing what makes us happy?
Yeah. Well, God does let us make our own choices. You got a choice what you do with your life. He makes you with the ability to make decisions. He just holds us responsible for the decisions that we make. And he says really clearly, as you make decisions in your life, just so you know, your purpose is not to pursue happiness. That's actually not it. Our world keeps saying, oh, look, as long as they're happy. No, not as long as you're happy. God said it's not about being happy. Now there is true contentment in your purpose. We're going to get to that next week. But it's not about being happy. God said it's about knowing me and loving me and actually coming to me. That's why you exist. We'll talk more about happiness next week. Herdy's going to preach next week, so we'll get to that. Yeah.
Cool. I got two more. Why wouldn't God make himself clearer if that's our purpose?
I feel like he has, okay, some people say, why wouldn't God just, show me, do something big for me, make himself clearer? I actually think God has been very clear to us if you would look. If you would look at three things, I'd say. Conscience. In your conscience, God wires us to desire him. Now, it gets expressed in all kinds of ways. We chase all kinds of things, but he's built us to love him and draw us to him, which is why the human race keeps asking that question, why are we here? The greatest evidence of the fact there is a God is we keep asking why we're here. We want meaning. God's wired our conscience, our inner heart, to actually desire him. And I think it's in us all. The human race is, some people say, incurably religious in that we want to know someone above us. We want to worship something bigger than us. So conscience. Creation, we sang about this earlier and John mentioned it. Look around. How can there be in nature such beauty and order and complexity and mystery without a designer? How can that be? How can this just be random chance? It is so beautiful, so amazing. We will spend the rest of humanity trying to understand how things are made. So conscience, creation, Christ. So God makes himself most clear as he actually comes and becomes a human. The man Jesus goes to the cross. He walks in history. There is no historian alive on earth who denies the existence of the man Jesus. Your big question is do you think he was God who's come to us? He lived such a remarkable life. You need to make a decision about what you think about Jesus. That's the greatest piece of evidence in history that God is real and God loves us and he's come to us. So I'm there going, whoa, what else has he got to do? He's come and he's walked among us. But I understand that, it's not always easy to see. But if you would look, you'll see there's so much evidence. Yep, there you go.
I just got another cool one sent through that I'll jump to. So if your questions don't get answered, you're floating around after.
Sure.
Cool.
I'll be hiding from people.
So let's make this our last
come
one.
Come and ask questions.
We'll make this our last one. Okay. It's a good one. Why should I trust in Christianity and not in other religions?
Because
other religions have meaning, yeah?
Yeah.
Purpose.
I think everyone has a personal responsibility to make a decision as to which religion you're going to follow. How do you make that decision? Well, you go investigating. You go looking at historical accounts. You look at the kind of religions that stand up in history. And I actually think one of the most compelling things about Christianity is the manuscript evidence for the Bible. It's such an accurate historical document. We go through a lot of that in the life course. But Christianity is so compelling because of the evidence for it. But the one thing that causes Christianity to stand out from every other religion will say it's about what you do to earn favor with God. And Jesus, you just hope you do enough. Hope you find him on a good day. Hope you've done enough of it. Christianity is the only one that says, no matter what you do, you on your own cannot do enough, but God loves you and he's come to do it for you. So Christianity is one that God comes to save us. Every other religion is you save yourself through religious things. Christianity goes, he's done it for us. And that is so compelling to me. If you never heard that before, you've got to come and check out the very heart of Christianity. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah.
Cool.
Good. Good. We're going to sing. So invite those guys up. I'll pray for us just as we close up this time now. Father God, we do thank you for your word. We do pray that you would help us. We want to know you. We want to see you. Would you be gracious to us and help us to do that? There's so many things that get in the way for us to know you and see you. Please remove them, Lord, so we can know why we're here and live well. Amen.